Hello and welcome to episode 15 of Chips of Chorlton. I am joined by Andy.
Hello.
Robin.
Hiya.
And Duncan.
Hello.
Hello, yeah. For those avid Chips of Chorlton listeners, you might have noticed we have skipped episode 14. For one reason or the other, the main reason being that it was pretty poor.
It was pretty shit.
Dreadful. It was a wet run.
So yeah, so if, I don't know, if we do any sponsorship or any sort of patron things...
Yeah, your reward for giving us money will be the worst podcast
we've
done.
The worst one we've ever recorded.
Most pissed.
We've decided to keep it in the chronology of episodes just because...
It happened.
Right. It did happen. Yeah.
Just to remind ourselves that it did happen, because I can't really remember what.
Oh, no,
what did happen? I remember we reviewed the Beagle.
Yeah, we did. Are we going to do that again?
We could probably do that again today.
We could do that maybe.
Like, because it was a bit passionate.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Too passionate. They're getting very introverted about a neighbourhood bar.
Yeah, the fear lasted a fair while after we recorded that. Pretty much a whole week. In fact, pretty much up until now.
I suppose the issue with the chip reviews is that you tend to start shitting on your own doorstep. Sorry, no, shitting where you eat. That's right, isn't it? Literally.
Oh, definitely.
And not literally.
Oh, you can shit on your doorstep. You know, icing on the cake there.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Of course, another reason.
So I woke up last Friday to sort of the tragic news that Stephen Auden from the band Hers, along with their tour manager Trevor, were killed in a car crash on the way to their show in Santa Ana.
Yeah, certainly didn't California. Feel appropriate to put out our drunken ramblings the following day.
No.
So here we are.
So this is very sort of close to home for us, I'd say. We've toured with them. We know
the label very
the guys
well.
At Heist and Hit really well. Yeah, so probably speak for all of us is a bit devastated, aren't we, really?
Yeah.
Oh, very much so. Still chewing it out, really.
It's still raw, yeah.
A lot of trying to sort of make any sense of it is still producing nothing but anger, really. And maybe we'll kind of get to a reason why within this chat, perhaps.
Yeah.
I suppose first thing to say is how did... we find out?
Well, I think Enemy tweeted about it pretty early, but I think someone we follow on Twitter had said something, and obviously at the time they'd said, you know, devastating to hear about what happened to Hers, and I think your first reaction might be, oh, you don't go there, you go to, oh shit, maybe they had their van stolen or something.
Yeah, well, I remember you saying in our Facebook group, have you seen the thing about Hers?
Yeah.
And I immediately thought, this is going to be good news.
Yeah.
I thought, this band's only going good places.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, I wonder what. Maybe like Film Score or like, you know, major label. I don't, you know, like maybe Heist or Hit had maybe licensed them to something big in America or something like that.
Yeah.
That's what I initially thought when I saw that first bit.
Yeah. But yeah, then reading on, it was just like, it was so startling. So startlingly devastating. I honestly couldn't believe it at the time.
Mm.
You know, still sort of struggled to believe that something like that.
You go straight into tunnel vision on that kind of thing.
It's just a stunned silence. I don't know whether I've ever really sort of felt like that in a way. And I think, we'll come on to why it was so sort of impactful. Mainly because obviously the music was fantastic and we all loved it. And it was a given. But they genuinely were incredibly nice people.
Oh yeah,
like there wasn't any bluster about that. It wasn't, you know, just a tribute saying that. They genuinely were some of the loveliest people I'd ever met on the road.
I'm going to say this without doubt, and no offense to everyone else that's ever toured under us, but without doubt, you know, the most impressive and infectious with their vibe. Band we've ever played with, and after they did play with us on the Big Balloon Tour, we tried to get them on board for every gig we could afterwards.
Yeah,
like every time it's like, let's get Hers on, let's do that again.
And also, just to after meeting them and listening to the album, and then to see how well they were doing, you know, as you get older, you can be a little bit bitter about your past. You know, in hindsight, you can think, oh well, you know, certain bands that have gone on to do better things, there might be a tinge of bitterness there. It's like, oh damn, why aren't we doing that? But there was none of that with Hers, because they were their, you know, beautiful sort of delicate integrity was so genuine that there was none of that. You know, you couldn't feel jealous or bitter about any you know, their success, because they were such amazing people, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember seeing them at Boardmasters. This is probably about 6 months after they toured with us, and just to see how they stepped up then, and they had like this core cult following there in Cornwall, and that was amazing to see. Everyone knew all the words, and it was just it was like it was properly happening for them. It was.
Yeah, I mean, my just remembering back to them, they're lovely people, but they loved playing live. They loved performing their music. They were just so happy to be gigging and stuff like that. It's just they were just fantastic guys, weren't they?
They made us want to play well.
Yeah,
yeah,
They
made us want to up our game.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say necessarily like up our game, just like just get in the zone for it, really.
Just enjoy it more. You know?
Yeah, because day 12 on a rainy Wednesday in Southampton, when they're on before you, just kind of. With their happiness, the general kind of vibe that's going on, it's like, yeah, we can do this, because I didn't think we could do this before, but yeah, we can definitely do this.
Yeah.
And I suppose moving on from that, one thing that kind of still one thing that angers me about the situation is the fact that I remember like the morning. So you told us you shared the news of us, Andy, on Thursday night, and Friday morning. I wake up to like the conversation still going on in the band group about sort of right, what's our statement on this? Because you've got to put something out. If you don't put something out, as you say, it creates a vacuum of, well, why haven't you said anything? But it's something that really kind of gets to me on this, especially when it happens, especially when it's a situation concerning people so in such a tragic way, because the culture of expressing shock about these things, it immediately deflects the grief onto you. And it becomes, and it's so hard to make it not seem like grief hopping.
Well, we did have a few tweets that said, oh, I'm really sorry for your loss. And it's like, this isn't, although we're devastated, this isn't our loss. This is, music's lost for a start. And obviously Martin, Pat, Heist or Hit, Mick as well, and all their family and friends. It's not. So you feel weird about sort of seeing that. And receiving those messages, and so that it does make you feel a little bit unsettled, I guess. And
I know,
uneasy and about actually saying anything.
Yeah, and like personally, from personal tweets or Facebook stuff. I mean, I just sort of retweeted the band thing, kind of out of pressure to do it. But if had that not been there, I wouldn't have said anything just yet, because I don't know. Until there's something of poignancy to deliver on the situation, and I think Martin did that.
Yeah.
So elegantly on Facebook when he talked about he shared one of the last pictures he had with them just before their sold out gig in New York on this tour at Baby's All Right, just basically talking about his journey with that band, and it really hit home to me just what Martin and Patrick must have seen in that band, because he was talking about how a friend had said to him, hey, have you heard this band before? And they was like, right, well, we've got to get this band on our label. And you start to realize considering where Martin and Patrick came from as the Answering Machine, it's such a similar sort of setup, isn't it? And you just know that they saw themselves in what was going
Absolutely,
on there.
Yeah.
And it just makes it even, yeah. I don't know, it's like, that's even, like, oh!
Yeah, it's even more cruel to see exactly. people, good people meet up with other good people and do something incredible, and like, it ends so tragically.
It was the perfect fit there. You just know that they had the right advice to give to Stephen and Auden.
They'd been there in almost the exact same situation.
Yeah. Pretty much the exact same.
Yeah.
And then moving that on to Heist or Hit, like, you think about the loss that it is to them. It's the equivalent of Factory Records losing Joy Division.
Yeah.
That is what it is.
Yeah.
It was their flagship band. That's the one that was proving everything wrong. Because even I had sort of doubts about the concept of it, only because, we'd seen Answering Machine kind of have a similar concept about drum machines and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, the way that the industry's getting ever more scattered and no one really knows, there's no formula for any of this.
No.
I think back when we were starting out at the same time as Answering Machine, it felt like there was maybe a formula. When we were the headlines and stuff like that,
because they got a drummer, didn't they? The Answering Machine.
Yeah, they got a drummer, and Ben's a great drummer, of course. But obviously something changed with the band at that point. But obviously, that's all us kind of going towards a formula of, well, if we're going to make it, we got to have everyone playing an instrument. I think that's what they kind of felt pressured to. But then Here's Hers just proving that all wrong. Because the tour they were on was a co-headline tour for a start. I really feel for Undercover Dream Lovers on that as well. Being involved in the tour like that, and then all of a sudden it's not ended.
Yeah. Just to go back to your point as well about the Joy Division Factory Records thing, I think that's absolutely right, because there's nothing more organic than well, in independent music than an indie label breaking a unconventional indie band, if you know what I mean. Mm. That doesn't happen that often, and they were doing it.
Yeah,
you know, they were there. I think they might have gone. It might have been the next album, and they genuinely might have been, you know.
Well, yeah, had it been as consistent as the other two, yeah, then no doubt.
They, and, you know, they could have been top 10 territory if they'd kept the same sort of, like, you know, playfulness and, you know, cheer about it, about the music, and, you know, originality. Then yeah, it easily could have gone that way.
At the risk of sounding like I don't listen to much music, I mean, I think they carried this perfect balance between Mac DeMarco and the Strokes. They had this sort of thing in the middle.
Well,
I mean, there's two
well,
big markets there that, you know, they were so appealing. Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. And they were so appealing. And in my mind, like, all it took, or I think all it was going to take, aside from a third album and that, was just one, you know, a very big band to just kind of champion them, maybe. Because you know that you could put a, you could have put that band in any size crowd at that point, and they know exactly what they're doing with it and where it's going to go.
Yeah, they'll turn heads, and, you know, they'll change people's preconceptions when they see them walk on stage.
Indeed. And then in, and this is kind of a bit strange, and it's already going to sound contradictory as to what I've said about how I wouldn't have wanted to say anything until there was something, unless there was something of poignancy to say about it, because it's still just, as I say, anger is the first thing that comes to mind. And when I think about that at the moment, I'm still quite stunned as to, I mean, I'm not trying to point any blame on this at all, but the fact that it felt as if the response from Six Music, especially, I'm personally not happy with it. But then again, I don't know what they could have done. But I can't help but feel,
not
you know,
Six
like
Music Fest in particular.
The Six Music Festival in particular. This happens in their, like, you know, being hosted in their hometown.
Yeah.
They are from Lipper. And I really kind of struggle with, I mean, Idols did a cover. I've not seen it.
Did
it wasn't in the
Harvey,
highlights. I watched the highlights on BBC4 on the Sunday, and that they played a different Idols song. But I just kind of felt as if, as we said before, if you don't respond, there's just speculation. It kind of felt like, it felt to me that, even though it's a helpless situation for them, it felt like they were still sweeping under the rug. Don't ruin the party. This is Liverpool. It's still, there could have been a moment of it all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even if it's just like a, some kind of memoriam, something that just kind of
dedicates, or like a, like an album playback somewhere, you know,
an album
where everyone
playback,
can just sit and listen, and,
or, you know, or even like a vigil or something like that of any sort, just something that shows numbers.
I think you're right.
And I don't think, unless there, I mean, I didn't listen to it constantly, did I? As I say, I saw the highlights reel, and I would have expected to have seen something about it in the highlights reel had there been anything.
Yeah.
And it's really unfortunate.
Yeah.
That it, the way that it all timed for Six Music like that. But it just feels like, why didn't anything happen there?
Yeah.
Because this isn't the first time this has happened now. This is like, you know, Viola Beach, that was a massive tragedy. I remember hearing, I still remember where I was when I heard that news, and that was just as nauseating without knowing any of them. Yeah. No connection to that whatsoever. But then I kind of feel that the reception to that tragedy, met, you know, compared with the reception of this tragedy, it's just a bit like, oh, okay, so this is it. This is the norm now.
Yeah.
Just silence.
Yeah.
Scream into it.
Well, I mean, that is, I think a couple of days after, we were talking about this before, I felt the same emotions as you, and basically like, oh, is that it? You know, midway through this week, you know, I'm sort of like scrolling through her's tweets just to sort of remember that it happened, and to still see people's reactions, just to remind myself of how tragic it was.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's about not processing it and just generally still wanting to be in amongst it. But yeah, it does. It feels like there's no, at the moment, there's no sort of peak to it. There's no peak thing of remembrance. Yeah, it still could happen. And I really hope it does.
There's nothing's happened. There's been no procession of closure on it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. There's just no closure yet. And I think, and you know, I talked about it with my mum whilst we were watching the highlights, and she was, and we both agreed, like, yeah, you don't want to do like one of those campaigns, like get them to number one. Cause it wasn't about potential. Like, you could hear that sound that they had. The singles were fantastic. I remember when I started doing my radio show on MCR Live, and the singles for Invitation to Hers had just started kind of coming out at that point. I remember being so excited for them because you could just tell like how potent it was.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, they're going to do it this time. Like, you know, they're really going to break through on this. This is proper.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the potential was met. And so you just want people to just listen to the album, just give it a chance, as opposed to try and make it a number one, because it's not about potential here. It's just about going.
It's a massively accomplished pop album, really.
Both albums are.
I mean, Invitation to Hers is, it was like, I remember listening to it after maybe one, were there two singles before it or one single? I can't remember. But I remember listening to the second track. I think it's called
Manny's Smile.
It's like, that's got to be a single. That is absolutely incredible. But that's the joy of that album is that, you know, you can sort of go through it and pick remaining singles, and every album track could be a single. It has a different vibe, but sort of encompassing this like organicness as well.
Mm. I mean, It's only just kind of occurred to me, really. You know, we're talking about the whole Factory Records comparison to this. You know, what would do it for me, essentially, is maybe something of a, like when they did a Joy Division Still album. It's kind of like it's like an anthology work, really. I think if an anthology work was made, you know, I'd get it straight away. I know I would, obviously. And, you know, you'd implore people to do so as well, because I think maybe that does it. I don't know. There needs to be some closure on it, and there just isn't any sign of it at this point.
Yeah,
I think that's where it's at.
Well, I think Heist or Hit might do something like an anthology would be great, and maybe if there's anything unreleased as well, that'd be fantastic to hear if they were working on anything.
Well, including the BBC session they did in South by Southwest as well.
Yeah.
On the boat, which was being, which Hugh Stevens, he did a dedicated show to them, didn't he?
Yeah.
He played those tracks, and they sound amazing.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few sessions around as well, isn't there? There's a Low 4 one as well, which was great. I rewatched that this week.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, things like that. Like,
yeah, so any sort of collection, live sessions, because I suppose in a way, live is what sort of turned a lot of people to them.
Mm.
The records are great and really appropriately well produced, but live, like the energy was what a lot of people turned them onto them, I guess.
Yeah,
yeah.
But with that said, thoughts very much with the family and friends and Heist or Hit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Their other family, as it were.
Yeah.
And I really hope, with all hopes, that Heist or Hit really do find that they have the energy to just keep going. Because I mean, I know they will. They've got a really colourful roster going on.
Yeah.
And you know, people should explore it, certainly. And it's, you know, and especially because, you know, we knew Heist or Hit as they were setting up. Really, we saw their hits and misses before.
Yeah.
You know, Hers was the first hit.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I won't say that. You know, like, kind of like without any doubt there.
Yeah.
But you know, just to my mind, saying that now, and just really hope that they keep on going.
Yeah.
And they will. They will.
And I suppose the best thing that you can do to try and support them is to go out and buy some aspect of Hers discography, vinyl, CD, or just listen to
just
it, buy it, a bit of merch, just, you know.
Just look into the label, see what there is, because they got loads.
So Six Music Festival was last weekend. What are your thoughts on it?
Fairly mixed.
Okay.
Anyone else?
I've just heard the odd track on Six. And some sound great, some less good. But I didn't actually watch any of the live footage on BBC4, so I can't comment too much about the spectacle. But, you know, I really enjoy it. When we played it a couple of years ago, it was really good fun. And
it was a lot of fun.
It was great when we played it.
And it's a great festival, you know.
I remember getting on quite a downer after we played it, because it was where we were playing had the, I'm trying to remember whose church it was, St.
Luke's?
Yeah.
Mark's?
That was it.
Let's go with Luke's.
Yeah.
St. Luke's Church in Glasgow, where we were playing. There was like that bar afterwards where a majority of the after party was kind of happening. There was a lot of bands knocking around. And no one wanted to talk to us. we were just in the corner with Memphis Industries, might hit the hay. Yeah.
not even Riley.
Riley
giving us the cold shoulder.
These cool dudes, and obviously we felt the pressure when we were there because we knew that Jules Holland's producer was in the crowd.
Well, I think I think that's where that came from. I think it was a little bit more introverted than actually in reality.
Essentially, we don't know, because we got.
We got told.
That's always our reaction. Like, I remember speaking to Ollie afterwards. I was like, "Yep, the producer was there. She thought it was really good. It's like, we fucked it. Yeah. Really good. You know, yeah. If it's not amazing, you ain't getting on.
Yeah, they blinded. Well, no, because without fuck it, I'm going with it. Because essentially, we're in direct competition with. Should we put someone new on or book Future Islands again? Like, and they'll just do that. Prove me wrong.
We were told that they were going to air the second half of our set live.
That was it. So we got duped, didn't we?
Yeah, so we back-ended the set with all the singles and had all the proggy songs right at the start.
All the album tracks at the beginning. And then, last minute change.
The key is not to play them.
Yeah, we should have just not played them. But because we were still on the new album trail, really, weren't we? Like, we were still on we're pushing the stuff, you know, we're pushing the album. Yeah. Like, you know, this is us doing an album, but essentially we had written a singles album. So, you know, yeah, there was going to be some pretty proggy stuff in there. And then just to kind of make matters worse, Liz Kershaw, like, messed up the intro. And then all of a sudden we get told, you're on live now.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Right, same plane dream.
Yeah,
here we go.
We're about to go into our proggiest thing. It's like, oh, fuck. Sounded great after five tracks. But yeah, so, I don't know. That's not to say that, that's not the reason why
that's
I thought.
The magic of
that's
radio,
not the reason why I thought this year's was a bit mixed.
Okay.
I think reasons for it being a bit mixed. I think watching the highlights with my mum on BBC Four.
What did your mum make of it?
She made some interesting
observations.
She made some interesting observations, which I'll get round to. Essentially, we played the Jules Holland Award. Like, ooh, who do you reckon's going to get on there? Little Sims wins that without a shadow of a doubt. You know, like, you could tell, like, you know, they had the visual and the entertainment aspect of it all. I think one problem that the festival may have suffered with this, two problems that the festival has probably suffered with this year is, firstly, they've curated a festival to be heard on the radio. And I think it makes for a very sort of polarizing lineup of stages. Yeah. So for people in the crowd, it's kind of like you're sort of, it's kind of like being in the audience for just a minute, I suppose, but only the Six Music equivalent, because for every band that's going to bring the heat, you've also got another band that's bringing the acoustic guitar. And I mean that in a very polarizing way. So it doesn't really work in the same sense that a music festival traditionally does. There's no real...
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Where are the good, the bad, and the queen in that sort of scale?
Well, this is my second problem. I think they've kind of sort of, I think to my personal opinion, I think they kind of sort of they kind of bent themselves over double to kind of cater for, you know, kind of heritage acts such as Damon Albarn. And the good, the bad, and the queen was really confusing. I mean, I get that what they've written is very complex. And, you know, the song that they chose to air on BBC Four was just baffling. But, well, no. But
I mean, is it one of the songs from the Brexit-inspired album?
Oh, yeah, it will be.
So, I mean, baffling is probably the appropriate
but
response.
The thing is, and you can see, like, you know, Damon's made a very wordy song there, and he's getting through it. He's doing his best, like... I can see that, yeah, he sounds like he's in tune and all this lot, but the dynamics are just completely wrong. It's not really something that they should have been doing. I mean, I have many reservations about The Good, The Bad, The Queen anyway, because I remember the first album that came out thinking, yeah, I'm not into this, and I'm not into this, what I've heard of the second album. But, I just... Yeah, my mum was very confused about it. And it I mean, she was very confused about everything, really. But it sort of reminded me of the sort of the thing I said to her is like, well, you know, He's not gonna be good in everything that he does. Like, he's done a lot of side projects. It's like this just isn't a good. It just doesn't click.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't click at all. And I think giving them that headlining space was just a bit like, huh? So it's just like you're just prioritizing sort of big names over this. I felt like, you know what I mean, they could have maybe had a younger artist headline. They could have taken a page out of Glastonbury's book. You know, like Stormzy.
Yeah,
like have more of the Stormzy effect going on like that.
Because I think Six Music they play enough alternative bands for that to be an option for them. They don't have to go down the sort of heritage recognisable route.
No.
They can just pick anyone big that the listeners have responded really well to.
They could have had Idols headline it.
Yeah.
You know, and Idols who did, as we say, did a great cover of hers.
Yeah.
What did my mum say about Idols? Let me tell you. At least with Coldplay, you can hear what they're talking about.
Did you have your notebook out whilst you sat with her then?
Well, my notebook was nearby.
Okay.
So I started saying all this stuff, like, and I was a bit like, I'm taking this.
How much, how much of this is paraphrasing, or do you think these are direct?
No, this is word for word. Anna Calvi was also on the highlights reel, which was like, oh, some friends of mine have told me to listen to her. And it was a very experimental track that was on. There was a lot of wailing going on. And her line there was, Jimi Hendrix used to do this, but better.
which what, is music?
Yeah. Jungle. Yeah, they showed Jungle, but they played an old song. They played The Heat.
Oh yeah,
to which my mum said, "Oh, it's a bit like those disco bands from the '80s, but much less disco. A bit like M People. I didn't think people still sounded like this anymore, which is bizarre. Oh, by far this is the best one though. Charlie Tuna from Jurassic 5 did a set with Crafty Cuts, which sounded good.
Yeah."
And she said, if this was Will Smith, they'd all be dancing by now. Which, when she had a point, though, because no one was really moving in the crowd. Well, right. It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell when a crowd's
actually
moving.
That's a strange point to make, though. It's like saying if Will Smith was on stage and playing his songs, people would dance.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty much a given,
rapping
isn't
about
it?
Birds and the bees. And I thought that was, I thought she'd not really seen the potential brilliance in Charlie Tuna's sex. I thought it sounded really good. But then, yeah, her overarching comment of it all was, performance is more about showing off than entertaining these days. Which, luckily, she kind of stepped down from when Hot Chip came on. Because Hot Chip absolutely brought the house down.
Yeah.
Which they would. And they do. Yeah. Every time. They're very good.
Yes. Yes, they are.
So Matty Healy sparked a little bit of debate online by tweeting he didn't think bands should charge their fans to meet them. Yeah, what's your thoughts on that? You've never done it, have you?
Oh God, no.
Why not? Why haven't you?
Well, we've done it in the traditional grassroots indie sense of doing in-stores. When you've got an album out, you do a record in-store. That should be the sort of incentive to go, is that you'll see the band play a handful of songs and then they'll sign your album and you can talk to them at that point.
It's more about buying the record though, isn't it, rather than just paying to meet you.
I'd rather buying a record be the ticket price for a meet and greet than separating it up as a whole new revenue stream.
Of course.
I think Matty Healy's directing this at bands at a similar level to the 1975, where they're obviously not going to do that. And also, if they did, it'd be massively exclusive.
I think he's actually referenced it about, because I've seen him talk about this a fair bit on Twitter, not just now that it's come up again, because they're talking about people like Lady Gaga and Ariana Grande in this article that we're referencing. But I've seen him talk about it before with more like mid-level and inspiring level bands. You know what I mean? Like people more sort of, I don't know. I don't know how they get away with it. People are like at our level, as if we'd fucking get away with that. As if we could even do it.
Yeah. It'd be really embarrassing if like
we just
three
feel
people
so
pay
bad.
The money.
Fuck it, let's give
thanks,
it a go.
Thanks, Neil. Yeah. Totally. But like, and he was kind of, and I think that's where his initial, I've forgotten the name of the band, but I remember him picking out a band that was like, oh, that's quite a small band. Like only like 20,000 followers.
Mm.
Wasn't sizable.
Yeah.
And bands of that level do get referenced in this article, because in any classic debate about the music industry, it's like, well, on the one hand this, but on the other hand that. All the major labels are basically trying to deflect you from the real cynicism of it all by saying that, oh, well, you know, for some young starting up and coming bands, like, you know, this is a good way of subsidizing their money. Like they need to make more money. It's like, fuck off.
The definition
if your
up
band
and
doesn't make enough money, get a job, keep a job. You know what I mean? Like, I assume you have a job whilst you're writing your music. Just hold on to your job until you can no longer do it.
The definition of up and coming though is completely different for a major label than it is in the real world, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. I think the article, yeah, we're referencing, it does give us the price to for the meet and greet for Lady Gaga.
How much is it?
It's $2,000 to go in. I don't know what
does
you
that,
get.
Does that include holding her Oscar as well?
Where they throw you in a backstage tour, pre-show reception, and swag bag. Mm. Although it doesn't include the actual concert ticket.
So it's like $2,900
yeah. It does seem a bit excessive. I suppose to sort of play devil's advocate and argue a bit, if people pay for it, then there's demand for it. and it should be an option. Again, joking about the demand of whoever, but if you had, right, we're going to have 10 meet and greets, 100 quid each, and every single gig of your tour, you get,
do you think
10
with the,
people
do
it, then it's worth it, surely.
Do you think with the cult of celebrity that people doing this should have some responsibility to the fact that people might not be able to help themselves, who might not necessarily be able to afford it? If you're a super fan or like an if you're incredibly obsessed with something, you might have to beg, borrow and steal to get that money together because you have a compulsion to do it, which may be beyond your means.
I've got a number of points against this. And the first one is what Andy's just said. I think there's this kind of socio-political implication of it all, where some fans could be your most devoted fans, but they can only afford to get a ticket. And then all of a sudden there's people that are in a much more well-off position. It's like, well, I've got this, but I want a bit more. It's like kind of smothering a cat, isn't it? You know, sort of like, well, I just like, yeah, just let me hold you. Let me do this. And what's sad about it is that there'll be people that can't afford it that know that this kind of package exists. Mm. And I think that's really, I think it, you know, it just divides social classes again even further. I think it's fucked up on that note. I've got some other points as well, but they've completely escaped me. Keep talking. Oh,
go on.
Like smothering a cat. Yeah, I've already read that. You wrote
that down. Nice.
These notes.
These notes. They're not notes. The only other note I've got written down here is Kylie Minogue at Gorilla. I DJ'd at Gorilla in the bar when she did like her... It was when she was on her latest album sort of promo tour, playing tiny venues. And I was DJing in the main bar. Thank you very much, Gorilla, for giving me that set. That was a lot of fun. And I'd heard that she was doing like £300 for a meet and greet at that gig. And you got to meet her, shake her hand, you get a tote bag. And I think you got a pink Stetson hat as well. She decided not to do it in the end, but didn't refund people. So people just spent 300 quid on a tote bag and a hat. What I heard.
Right. Yeah.
But that's nothing against Gorilla. That's just Kylie. Like, yeah, that's entirely her fault there. So
she can. She's probably hidden behind the machine at that point, hasn't she? It's like, it wasn't my.
Yeah, just like, just didn't feel like it that day.
Her security probably deemed that there wasn't an appropriate place to do it or something, and then had to call it. But yeah, obviously those people should be refunded.
I think it also takes away the magic of sort of artists and celebrities. Like, whatever happened to the chance of it all? You know what, that's a fucking terrible point. The point I was going to make was, as you were saying Andy, about people who can't really afford it, and how there's got to be a more honest way of sort of rewarding the most devoted fans, not just on a financial aspect of it all. And I was told a story by Patrick, who I used to do the radio show with. He was telling me about how Steve-O from Jackass really, like, he was watching that Motley Crue documentary that's out. Have you seen that? And he was saying that how Steve-O had basically, his dad saved up to buy them tickets to see Motley Crue, I think in Toronto, where he was from at the time, or where he was living. And it was like, but it was behind a glass. It was in like in a box. And he went, "See, Motley Crue behind glass sucks." He said, "You can get rid of them tickets." He was like, right. And his dad was like, right, fine, get your own tickets then. And what he ended up doing was he found the name of their manager on the back of a CD and rang up every hotel in the area on the day asking if that person, if he could be, you know, put through to that person's room. It eventually worked. Literally went through like 100, 200 hotels or whatever. And then they picked up and it was like, "Hello, who's this?" And it was like, "Oh yeah, I'm looking for so-and-so." The manager was like, he's not here right now, but I'm his brother. Can I help you?" And apparently his brother was in the band.
Okay.
So Steve-O knows this. He's just like, "Oh my fucking God, right, you're never going to believe this. I'm only 15, but I've rung up every hotel asking for your brother's name to see if I can get in touch with you guys and just get some tickets." And then they were like, "Holy shit, that's amazing. Come down to the show. We'll give you backstage passes and seats in the fifth row."
Yeah.
Like, that's how you're rewarded. That's amazing. But obviously, admittedly, not everyone can do that. For every gig they ever want to go to, or like for any band they feel that passionately about.
Yeah, but I think it's nice to have someone Matty, sort of like Matty, up in those echelons of, you know, arena tours now, sort of saying this stuff, because it does need to be said. It is a little bit obscene to pay that amount of money to hang out with someone in a room for 10 minutes. And
well, it's totally disingenuous, and especially if you can tell that the artist is just being put through the motions on this. And it's really shady of major labels to try and make this the norm.
I remember a video of... is it Louis Tomlinson from One Direction? Like, you could like just see him going through the motions when he's meeting fans, and it's at one of these meet and greet events, and it's just like,
yeah,
the cynicism in his face is just horrible.
Well,
like,
it's the result as well of major label deals that people have, and you know, the old 360 deal. I don't know if that's still a thing. I'm guessing that's just the norm now. But as soon as you sign that with, you know,
you're hostage with everything, to whatever they tell you to do.
You've got to do it like with everything else. You just got to stand there, and I suppose all you can do is be nice and not a dickhead, because it's going to be awkward. Of course it is. I watched the rewatched the behind the scenes Katy Perry film recently, and she does it as well, and you can tell that although it's massively awkward and a lot of the people who've paid for it are kids, she at least is sort of trying in the most like forced
to,
genuine
to put
way.
Her own imprint on it,
yeah, to try and make an impression, just to like say something funny or kooky or whatever, to make an impression so that at least it might be worth their money. She hasn't just gone, hi, how's it going, what do you have for tea?
In that article, Fallout Boy get a right slagging off for just being like, yeah, I paid 250 quid and all I got was a grunt kind of thing. And then there's a link to Avril Lavigne when she did it in South America, just all these pictures, all these really awkward photos of people, and there's a lot of personal space going on in the middle, just like then again, you know, like I can't. Yeah, you're right. It's a zoo for the rich, isn't it? And it's horrible. Yeah. And as someone, you know, like if I think about the artist that I would be sort of like, oh my god, really, you know, like you know, your heroes, your musical heroes. You don't want to see them in a windowless room, backstage at a gig. You want to see them in their natural environment. You want to see them painstakingly picking out which milk to. Well, I don't know why it'd be milk. Maybe if they're vegan or something, they might be deciding what soy milk they want for that week. Like, you know, you want to see them like kind of just as they are in their natural environment.
Also, do you not think that for genuine artists and pop stars, that personality is sort of supposed to be evoked from music and live shows? And isn't that, although obviously a lot of it is very contrived now and controlled, but isn't that the sort of, you know, interpretation that you just want, and that's it? I don't know why people would want to get any closer.
You're right. You know, I
never meet your heroes. You know?
Yeah, when I started to get into lyric writing, like started to enjoy it. No, you start to realise that, you know, it's a wonderful platform for you to kind of sort of get some shit off your chest, but you can also hide it under some other things.
Yeah.
And I always hated having to write press releases where it's always like, right, you have to tell us what every song's about. It's like, well, each song's probably about five different things.
Yeah.
And it depends on how I was feeling on the day or whatever else.
But what made it to the press release was fried chicken.
Fried chicken. There's nothing more harrowing. There's nothing that makes your dick shrink more than hearing Lauren Laverne read out your press release in the morning as your first single's getting played out.
Yeah.
And you go, yeah, Dutch Uncles have a new album. Apparently it's about fried chicken.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck's sake! It was supposed to be about playing God. I just ended up writing fried chicken.
But instead it's about the decision of a three-piece or a five-piece.
Or a three-piece or a five-piece. Or a combo box piece.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, and, you know, but this is it exactly. That's what you're saying, is that, like, you know, you kind of get into music to sort of evade confrontation in a way. It's decent like that. You know, not decent, but like it's helpful like that for sometimes. And then to have to do meet and greets, you have to sort of explain yourself again.
Yeah.
Like, never explain yourself.
Have you, I suppose you've, other than Steve Reich, have you ever met anyone?
That wasn't a meet and greet, that was a meet.
It was just a meet, wasn't it?
It was a meet, yeah.
That was it just a greet?
That was set up by his publisher.
It was a bit of a meet and greet.
I suppose, but
we didn't pay for it.
Yeah, no. Yeah, we had our time with them. So.
Yeah. And then we were moved on.
And we all looked fantastic doing it as well.
Yeah. We've tweeted that picture before.
We could always tweet it again.
Has there been anyone you've kind of really wanted to meet, but you didn't go up to, you know, the catering tents, or is there anyone you've met and been underwhelmed
by?
Dead
60s. I met the Dead 60s when I was 17. That was...
Dead 60s.
Wanker.
Very starstruck.
For me, one person who we've been in a backstage room with a number of times now, and I've never gone up and said anything to them, is Alexis Taylor. Right. Because I am so ashamed as to the fact that I figure he must know who we are, because when Fester and Flexin' came out, the comparisons I got to him because of the treatment of my voice and everything like that. Admittedly, Fester could be a hot chip song in some respects, but in other respects, no, not at all.
If he Twitter searches hot chip,
and I'm
he's going
to
find a lot
embarrassed to ever introduce myself to him that I just haven't done it. And I've had a number of times that I could have done it, and every time it's like, nope, don't even want to do it. Even when our manager started managing, doing his radio, it's like, you know, you could see him every time he's in Manchester. If you want, it's like, nope, don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing Faris from The Horrors. Remember what festival was that?
Kendall Cole.
And he was sat at the edge of the catering tent, just playing Footy Manager on his laptop with a football Blackburn shirt. And then I was like, oh my god, I could go. I've got the perfect opportunity now as a fellow Football Manager fan to go and be like, so how's it going? You know, we had a stadium named after you yet. but then I was like, no, I can't do it. It's too embarrassing. But then I remember Henry, Pete's brother, who plays keys for us, just walked over into him, was like, high fiving him.
They'd worked in the studio, haven't they? He's a good egg. Faris is a very good egg. Met him a number of. I won't talk about it.
So if you do want to listen to episode 14, it will cost £100. We will put it directly onto CD, and Duncan will deliver it personally.
Yeah, and he'll hang around for a bit,
and then you get a picture.
And if you ask me to do the dance, I'll do the dance.
for an extra pony.
It's like, do the dance. How much you got?
New section on the podcast.
What stupid fucking question's that?
There we go.
Nice.
Yeah. Slack is in the room, isn't it?
It is.
Well, you got the voice and the looks.
There we go. Yeah. As I'm getting bigger, I'm looking more and more like Guy Garvey.
Oh, I didn't mean that.
Yeah, you did. That's fine.
You calling Guy fat?
Yeah. Well, people used to say used to look like Ricky Wilson from the Kaiser Chiefs, but I can see that. But he got thinner. And as soon as Ricky got thinner, I started looking like Guy Garvey.
I think you look like Josh Homme.
I think
Josh Homme.
Yeah, I think this is all in your head, Neil.
Yeah, you're definitely a pound shop Josh Homme.
Pound shop Josh, cheers, mate.
Pound bakery.
Pound bakery Josh Homme.
You are a pound bakery Josh Homme.
Pound bakery, yeah. Jesus. Thanks, guys.
You see, they do fish finger sandwiches now.
I don't really care.
All right, just saying.
Yeah, so I asked on Twitter, we have answered a few questions on the other episode that we're not airing, but yeah, as we discussed, that's £100 now for anyone that's listening to it. So this question came from our live sound engineer, the guy who mixes your records, Phil Bullyment. Phil's question was, top 5 travel lodges.
Oh, well, it's a very exciting question for us.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. And it's,
I mean, right, okay, how do we even... Right, okay, well, we're totally unprepared. Right,
don't worry. I've got my notes. It's fine. I picked out 5. And I kind of gave you sort of 10 minutes warning on this. I just basically said which 5 they were. So if you guys want to take any of these out, replace it with something else, I assume you've had time to do that. But in the meantime, we should probably just try and rank these. So I've got Gateshead, Islington/Hackney, we haven't quite decided which one of those. York, where we went for Robin Stag do. Norwich Central,
I think so.
And finally, the one just outside of Brighton.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, so you're all wincing and whatever about those memories. Any of those you'd take out, would want to swap right now? Or shall I explain what happened?
I feel like the Brighton one's in there for the story.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I'll go for Hack. Well, I don't know, did anything interesting happen at the Islington one? I can't remember. I've only got memories of the Hackney one.
Mm. It should be noted that I think only 2 of these have memories that are actually merited to Travelodge as an experience, as the rooms themselves. Mm.
So Norwich being one of that.
Norwich being one of those.
Okay.
How did it go? Right, okay, so...
So it's happened twice. It's like the first 2 times we played Norwich, we stayed at this Travelodge, and we get there and we think the bar's closed, and then the lovely woman behind the bar,
Pete's girl,
we call her Pete's girl. We just all, you know, just wanted that pint of Stella.
Yeah, just one really more Stella. If you see Match of the Days on like TV or whatever, like on the TV, it's just like, oh, this could really work. No one else is in here.
And Pete goes off. Excuse me. Any chance we could get a pint? She's like, just let me finish my kebab and I'll get you a pint. It's like, oh, yes.
Oh, my God. Yeah, because, you know, you get used to rejection of that sort, don't you?
Of course, so, yeah.
That's what you expect.
She bent the rules for us that time.
Twice. What a woman.
Generally, at British hotels, after midnight, it's not going to happen. You're not going to get that really unnecessary pint of Stella.
No.
But this woman was fantastic and not a job's worth in any sense.
Not a job's worth in any sense. Number 4 is Well, no, not number four, but the other one there, of course, was
Newcastle.
York.
Right, York.
You want to talk about Newcastle? Right, yeah, Newcastle. So Gateshead, really weird. These are just memorable times in travel lodges. This was not a good travel lodge, this case points out. After much kerfuffle as to which travel lodge we were in, we've realised it was the Gateshead one and not Newcastle Central or whatever it was. Yeah. So we get out to Gateshead, we check in. We're all on the ground floor, and for some reason, the room I'm sharing with yourself, Rob, were you in that room?
Yeah, I was
well?
In there. Yeah, maybe Andy and.
Were we
A team?
Were we team A star 69?
Yeah, we won't go into details about the name.
Which basically just means that we're the three that don't snort.
Yeah,
that's all that means. Yeah. Yeah, that's how it works. Okay, yeah. So we get a room, but when we get in there, kind of drop our bags off. You know, need the toilet.
That's the only thing we dropped at that point.
For the record, that's the only thing we dropped. Walked into the toilet area, and it absolutely hummed. It reeked of like just pure, even like sulfur-esque gas.
Yeah,
it was really bad. It was like
pretty eggy. Yeah,
yeah, like the eggiest of. Brown eggs had been laid in there, or something was going on. Something was not right, and it was hard to say what was going on. And I genuinely thought it was a gas leak.
Yeah. It's fair to say you entered a frenzy at that point.
I entered a frenzy, yeah, because I immediately think, oh my god, that's it.
Like we're gonna die.
Yeah, this is it. Like we're gonna die from a gas leak in a travelodge toilet. So I rush to reception. I go, excuse me, miss. Excuse me, lady. There's a big problem going on with our room. Would you mind coming along to see what's going on? There's a really bad smell in the toilet.
So she comes.
And she comes along. She came along. And then she kind of joined us like, why? What's the problem? And it's like, I don't know why I'm doing that. Sorry, I don't need to do that. And then I was like, can you not smell it? There's been a gas leak in this room. And basically, I've just basically brought her into a toilet to smell shit. And she's like, no, I think it's the smell of the roommate. And it was like, oh my god.
It's just a fucking turd.
And now she must think that I get like a real,
real thrill.
A real thrill. I've just taken a devastating dump in a room.
And complaining about it.
Excuse me. I think there's been a gas leak in the toilet. I think it might have been a real problem here. And I'm not happy with the service.
Yeah, because I guess you didn't explain that it was that you thought it was a potential gas leak. You just said there's a problem. Yeah. So pointing out the problem was is that you'd done a shit.
Oh, should we leave it there?
Yeah.